When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
If vitamin D was testosterone, then we would empirically supplement for every child, pregnant lady, individual over the age of 75, and individual with prediabetes. And how often will we check those levels for any of those people?
Well, if we, the powers that be, are the endocrine society, we would recommend against routine testing.
For those on and off vitamin D, or in our analogy, another hormone, testosterone. So we'll dive into this review and give you our thoughts on that and many other things. Welcome back to the Gillette Health Podcast, where we give you tools to develop a balanced approach for health. I'm Dr. Kyle Gillette.
And I'm James O'Hara, nurse practitioner. Today we are reviewing the Endocrine Society vitamin D guidelines. And these are hot off the presses within the last couple of months. Probably later than that at the time this video comes out. We're going to go down and there are, 14 questions that we're going to take a look at and see, do these make sense?
Yeah, topics include, should you take vitamin D? Should you test vitamin D? What benefits might it have? And what harms might it have? Just in the last week, clinically, I've heard people say, shouldn't my vitamin D level be higher? Shouldn't I take more? They ask, well, should I take K2 with it? How much K2 should I take with it? What type of K2 should I take with it? What are the risks of vitamin D toxicity? What is the optimal range? Should you even test it? So we will answer as many of those questions as possible, but first we will go into the Endocrine Society's recommendation, because I'm sure that they just require testing and precision treatment of everyone, right?
Yeah, they probably set a range, recommend testing to see, do you need to take vitamin D? Do you not need to take vitamin D? Because people get different amounts of sunlight, and some people have naturally higher or lower levels of vitamin D.
Just like testosterone.
Talking about that, we're saying 25 hydroxy vitamin D. That's like a distinction I suppose we should make. This is what pretty well any traditional medical provider, physician, PA, NP is going to be ordering.
But what if you have chronic kidney disease, you're on dialysis?
Your nephrologist then might order a 1 hydroxy vitamin D.
Or maybe your family doctor. What if your calcium levels in the blood are super high?
Then you need to take less vitamin D.
What if you have osteoporosis? You can have, just like if you're talking about other hormones, again, vitamin D is a steroid hormone, just like testosterone and estrogen. So there's going to be a seemingly infinite number of permutations of what you can do, what you can't do. So writing guidelines is relatively difficult, but they started with ages 1 through 18, and then ages 19 through 50, 50 to 74, greater than 75. They did touch base regarding pregnant patients and whether they should supplement with vitamin D. It'd be interesting to hear Maddie's opinion on this. And of those with prediabetes, but not diabetes.
Yeah. So question number 1, should empiric vitamin D supplementation, I'm just going to abbreviate here and say, be used for children and adolescents, so age range 1 to 18?
They think yes.
And what specific dose do they recommend?
I don't see the specific dose for children here. Did they say 600?
They said in the 600? Clinical trials included in their SR, I assume systematic review, says with respect to respiratory tract infections, the doses range from 300 to 2,000 IUs daily equivalent. The estimated weighted average was approximately 1,200 IUs per day. So,
but they don't really, they just say what was used in the trials. I guess they don't recommend it. The RDA, or recommended daily allowance, is 600 IUs for ages up to 70, and then 800 IUs for older than 70. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And then also 600 IUs during pregnancy. So that's the recommended daily allowance to prevent deficiency. So I think supplementing with more than this makes sense. And I also find it interesting that at age 18, vitamin D supplementation helps prevent respiratory tract infections, but it definitely does not when you turn 19.
Yeah, 19th birthday, throw that vitamin D away, you're an adult now.
For ages 19 to 49 and ages 50 to 74, they actually recommend no vitamin D supplementation, but they do say follow the Institute of Medicine's recommended daily allowance. Does this mean if you've had a bariatric surgery and you have fat-soluble vitamin malabsorption, maybe you're also on some over-the-counter Ollie, which I believe is Orlistat, or Xenical, which is the extended release.
Or maybe you take some cholestyramine for your gallbladder that you had out, and you've got, you know, bile acid diarrhea, and that solves the problem for you, but now you don't absorb your fat solubles.
Yeah. So lots of things to think about here. I suppose we could agree with no empiric vitamin D supplementation after they have checked their lab and they're at an optimal range, which is presumably between about 50 and 120, or 50 and 100 if you don't want to be overly aggressive and you're worried about the toxicity in these age ranges. But interestingly enough, they actually recommend against checking vitamin D, even in individuals who are obese or with very dark skin phenotypes.
Yeah, so you're looking at the chart across the age ranges. So you've looked at your sort of adult ranges here. Over the age of 75, which I believe is where we're moving to next, empiric vitamin D supplementation. So, you know, because of the potential to lower the risk of mortality. So if I borrow from your example, at age 74, definitely doesn't help to lower mortality, but at age 75, on your 75th birthday, better ask your grandkids for some vitamin D because you're going to need it.
Yeah.
According to the Endocrine Society.
Yeah, it's interesting. They do have an asterisk here, and it says this does not address individuals with underlying health conditions that could alter vitamin D physiology. I suppose you could make a case that almost everyone has slightly different genetics of their vitamin D receptor. So I guess these guidelines don't apply to anyone.
In an extreme case, I suppose you could say that.
Yeah. The examples they list are short gut, gastric bypass, inflammatory bowel, some medications, and nephrotic syndrome, which is interesting that they would pick those things. I suppose it's not wrong. And then it also does not address persons known to be at high risk for fractures. So like anything else, risk for fractures is on a continuum or spectrum. So certainly chat with your physician about what your fracture risk is. But there's a lot of very metabolically healthy individuals under the age of 60, under the age of 75, often female, not always female, but often between the ages of 50 and 75, that have very low body fat percentages, and they have at least one area on their body. Maybe it's their mid radial shaft, which is the mid part of their arm bone, and their DEXA scan says that their spine is pretty good and their hips and femurs are pretty good. And sure enough, they get a fracture there. So you can't help but think that in cases like that, you still want to check a vitamin D. And if you came up with almost any patient, you can almost always think of a reason to check a vitamin D.
Yeah. And I mean, we'll skip to this a bit later and talk about what they think is the criteria for checking a vitamin D, because if they're recommending against routine testing, And it's basically, do you supplement, yes or no, and you're never checking any levels? There's sort of one case that they present, but pregnancy is another one of those categories. It's like, yep, empiric vitamin D supplementation. No dosage really listed here other than they state the RDA, you know, 600 IUs during pregnancy. And I think ACOG recommends this, they're saying. And it has the potential to lower risk of preeclampsia, intrauterine mortality, preterm births, small for gestational age birth, and neonatal mortality. So this is probably going to be in most prenatals. Yeah, I'm assuming always check your label, of course, but assuming it's in the prenatal, the space has sort of been covered, but it's nice to see that sort of encouraged.
Yeah, that is good. The next recommendation, or the last recommendation, is for prediabetes. And they do recommend supplementation because of potentially lowering the risk of progression to diabetes. So once you get to that A1C of 6.5, then you also stop your supplement.
Yeah, that's an odd one because presumably I think the data this comes from is vitamin D theoretically helping to preserve beta cell function. I don't think there's been drastic changes in like A1C or ability to produce insulin with vitamin D supplementation. But you would think if someone's down the last 10 or 20% of their beta cell function, like a type 2 diabetes, that would matter also. But maybe the effect is even less pronounced because they're already sort of so far gone, so to speak. But it sounds like you're giving up on diabetics if you put it a certain way. And I don't think that's necessarily their intention.
Yeah.
They have lots of recommendations for diabetics being the Endocrine Society. But yeah, that's an interesting sort of disparity to draw there where pre-diabetics are recommended something, diabetics are not.
Another gem I found in here is they complain about the cost of a 25-hydroxy vitamin D assay. Varies from $25 to $100 US dollars in various developed countries. And they said this does not include the cost of a healthcare visit or ordering the test, or the potential need for additional testing, which, of course, if you get it from the internet, if only there was a website where you could just click a few buttons and order labs like that.
Yeah, I don't think this test is that expensive as they're making it out to be. Maybe if you're going through the traditional insurance model, maybe the lab does charge your insurance $100 for vitamin D because they can. And then they argue about it, and maybe your insurance ends up paying $33 or something like that. But now we have some sort of questions that people might have about vitamin D after looking at that chart. And we went down the first one here about adolescence. Question number two is, should empiric vitamin D supplementation be used for non-pregnant adults less than age of 50? And they say they recommend against empiric vitamin D supplementation.
Yeah. Again, I suppose they have to also listen to the lobbyists and the people that fund them. What would happen if they recommended for both supplementation up to a certain level and testing up to a certain level? What would happen to the cost in the healthcare system and insurance? Presumably, you know, they are the Endocrine Society, usually insurance companies and Medicare and whatnot. They will follow suit and they will decide what they're going to reimburse based off of expert recommendations like this.
Yeah, I guess my question would be, what has happened to the, or what is the price of a lipid panel? You know, that's something that is recommended.
$2-3.
I don't know what your insurance gets billed for that. I don't know what the, you know, the company actually pays out. But if you build something into sort of a checklist of like, hey, you know, these are your, what do they call them, quality health metrics, or I've had the either good fortune or bad fortune of not being intimately tethered to those. So you have these sort of metrics that are tied to your reimbursement and so forth. But I would assume with more demand and the same supply and some competition that the price would go down.
Maybe we should list a basic vitamin panel on our website. People can go to gillettehealth.com and click order labs And if they order a basic lipid panel, by the way, our basic lipid panel is a lipid panel, an apolipoprotein B, and a lipoprotein little a. That's our basic lipid panel. So you can order that for $20, even if you're not a patient. And if something comes back crazy, then you follow up with your doctor or follow up with us. And we would love to have more people at the clinic if you're a United States citizen. But maybe we'll add something with vitamin D and some other basic vitamins like that.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, vitamin D, B12, folate, those are very cheap and easy things to check.
Mercury.
And this next one kind of strikes me as a trick question.
Sorry. I just had to do that. What's the next one?
Should vitamin D be used for non-pregnant adults of less than 50 years of age only when 25-hydroxy vitamin D levels are below a threshold? And the answer is we recommend against testing. We recommend against routine testing.
So the answer is not yes and not no. It's you shouldn't have tested them, and insurance is not going to reimburse for this.
And they're basically not going to give you any suggestions based on where that level is. So say you happen to accidentally order a vitamin D on someone, and then you get a result back and it's low. Then you're asking the question, should vitamin D supplementation be started? And they say, well, we recommend against testing.
If everyone did perineal sunning, this would not be an issue.
Probably still an issue.
Question three is, should vitamin D supplementation versus no vitamin D supplementation be used for, we just did question three, below a certain level. So that was a trick question. Let's see. Yeah, the previous one was less than 50 years of age.
Yeah. Number four is, should empiric supplementation be used for adults age 50 to 74? And they suggest against routine vitamin D supplementation.
Correct. And then again, question five, deja vu. Should it be used for those individuals when vitamin D levels are below a certain threshold?
Yeah, and here's a clue. We referenced this earlier, but it says the recommendation relates to generally healthy adults who do not have an otherwise established indication. I think that should be indication, not indications. Maybe I'm wrong, but anyway, hypocalcemia.
Yep.
That's the circumstance you're allowed to test for vitamin D.
Or osteoporosis or other things. Yeah. Generally healthy adults, I believe previously we referenced a study where 6% of adults are metabolically healthy and even less than that in the 50 to 74 age range. So if they're recommending for prediabetes, I feel like it's very reasonable to recommend for people with significant insulin resistance and obesity as well.
Next, we have question six. Should empiric vitamin D supplementation versus no supplementation be used adults greater than 75? And this is a kind of unique dosing range. They dose up to specifically 333 IUs daily.
Yeah, they must have grabbed that from a study. Their weighted average was approximately 900 IUs per day, which is relatively low. And interestingly, I do not believe they discussed vitamin K2, MK4, or MK7 at all while they spoke about the supplementation in this category.
Yeah, I didn't see anything, reading through all of this regarding vitamin K2, which is a common question people have is, do I need to take it because I'm taking vitamin D3 and the calcium is going to get in my arteries, that sort of thing. We can circle back to some of those at the end for our, what would that be, tier two questions outside of the guidelines that maybe we can provide some insight into.
Yep.
Number seven, so we're halfway through now. It's the same thing. Yep. If it's below a threshold, do you supplement? And they say, we suggest against routine testing.
Yep.
This is like, what do I do?
Vitamin D is a hormone, and they hate testing for hormones, and they hate testing for vitamin D.
It's true. You'll probably get some pushback if you're asking for some extra labs, because it's extra work that's harder to fit into a very short office visit. But this is kind of like, hey, if I burned my hand on the stove, what do I do about that? It's like, We recommend not burning your
hand
on the stove.
Don't burn your hand. Yeah.
Next question.
So, yeah. It's kind of like med spa HRT. Here's your HRT. We recommend for it because of its benefits. And we do not test it. And if we do test, it's dried blood spot or salivary tests.
Yikes.
Yep. One thing that I think is interesting is they put a huge emphasis on calcium levels in the blood. Serum calcium levels, not intracellular calcium. And there are many other factors, for example, parathyroid hormone levels. And you can follow a PTH. We do occasionally. And if it becomes high, then even if you have a decent vitamin D, then it can be potentially concerning. You know, there's certainly people on with osteoporosis on that thyroid peptide, calcitonin. Calcitonin salmon is just a thyroid peptide to help lower calcium levels back down and then help break down less bone. But I would have liked to see a bit of discussion on that. This paper is specifically on their vitamin D recommendations, but they did talk a lot about the studies that they discussed in order to get that to that recommendation. But that would have been nice to see.
Yeah, and I think this isn't completely, you know, their fault that it's a ambiguous guideline. A lot of these studies, when I've looked at them and sort of like, oh, you know, this dose of vitamin D has this benefit, they don't necessarily look at pre and post treatment levels. Sometimes they do. And that's mm-hmm. nice to see it. The ones that I'm thinking of with athletic performance, and they're like, hey, if we push them from a sufficient range to above 50, what happens? Good things. Sometimes the data is mixed, of course, but, those trials are more specifically designed, whereas these sort of disease prevention, broader scale trials yeah. are usually just take this dose, 3 years, let's go and see what happened from taking, you know, 1,200 IUs. Very yeah. rarely do they have doses up, even approaching, you know, 5,000.
Speaking of that, except 9 months instead of 3 years, question 8-9, should vitamin D supplementation be used empirically during pregnancy? And what level should you use? Below or above the threshold.
Yeah, look at that. This one did have a range that went all the way up to 5,000 IUs per day.
Yeah.
And the average was 2,500. So whoever decided to run the studies in pregnancy decided to use a little bit of extra.
And of course, they recommend against testing, which is hilarious at this point.
I mean, I think we could have got it. I mean, they could have just put this as a broad scale question, but it gets funnier the more times I see it show up. So this is the fourth time we've like burnt our hands, so to speak, and we're asking what do we do? And they say, you shouldn't have done that.
Yeah. And once again, if you have low calcium, then it's okay. You can get tested for your vitamin D level.
Then we have a question about prediabetes. Question number 10, should vitamin D supplementation be used in adults with prediabetes, like by glycemic criteria? And it says with high-risk prediabetes, which I would argue that all prediabetes is high-risk.
Agreed.
In addition to lifestyle modification, which is very awesome. Good. That's fantastic to see in there. They do suggest vitamin D to reduce the risk of progression. So that's the sort of specific benefit. And then they put another remark about lifestyle modification, which I think is great. And this one used maybe even the highest doses, up to 7,500 IUs per day on the high end there. 7,543, to be precise.
Hmm.
I wonder where they sourced a vitamin D that contained that amount.
Yeah, that is interesting. That's a very random dose. Of note, they identified the high-risk prediabetes according to their fasting glucose A1C or two-hour glucose tolerance test. So I suppose if you just have a little prediabetes, then you don't supplement, although it makes a lot of sense to supplement if you're low in that category. I don't know why you wouldn't check. But I suppose, as usual, they are not big on checking vitamin D. They didn't have a question about the level for the prediabetes question. But recommendation 11 is regarding patients aged 50 and older, or any adult really, aged 50 and older. who have indications for vitamin D supplementation or treatment, they actually recommend the lower vitamin D dose instead of the higher non-daily vitamin D dose.
Yeah, which is interesting because you have several studies that show you achieve the same levels in terms of 25 hydroxy vitamin D, whether you're taking that, you know, 30,000 IUs once per week or splitting it up into 4,000 or 5,000 IUs daily. I suppose that they just sort of came to this conclusion because, you know, what did most of the study that showed benefit use? And I would presume that most of those are a lower daily dose. So they're going with the weight of the evidence.
Mm-hmm. They said they also noticed a trend for intermittent high dose vitamin D to increase fracture risk, relative risk of 1.08 and a confidence interval that crosses over one.
So it's not significant.
So it's not statistically significant. Maybe it is clinically significant. I suppose you could say a lot of individuals older than 50, especially older than 70, do meet chronic kidney disease criteria, often even 3A or 3B, and sometimes even 4. I don't know if they excluded for all of those people in these 5 studies that they evaluated. But those individuals are not going to be able to convert their 25-hydroxy-D to the 125-hydroxy-D, which the kidneys help with, which is kind of the more active form. And in that case, it does make sense to supplement more often so that you're not overwhelming the system. There's more time to convert it. Although I guess you could also make a case in those patients, depending on how significant their kidney disease is, hopefully they're checking a cystatin C and not just a creatinine, is maybe you consider treating with a little bit of 125 in addition to 25 hydroxy vitamin. So in addition to D3, you can treat with rock calcitrol, whatever the brand name of the 125 hydroxy is.
Yep. And then we have question 12, which is basically the same thing. They recommend against screening. And then question 13 is specific to adults with dark complexion. And again, they recommend against screening. And then question 14, which is interesting. Individuals with obesity who are at higher risk of prediabetes, they're pre-diabetic. You could call it that, I suppose.
Yes, all individuals with obesity.
But this recommendation relates to
generally healthy adults
with obesity.
With obesity. Wait a second.
That's, what do you call that? An oxymoron?
Yeah. Is that by BMI criteria? Because I consider myself a generally healthy adult, but I'm not quite obese. I'm overweight.
So for bodybuilders?
They're all on vitamin D anyway, because it's a myostatin inhibitor. They heard that from James O'Hara.
It's a little bit of a myostatin inhibitor, probably my favorite one on the market right now until Lilly launches bimagrumab. Mm-hmm. And then I will just become a Lilly shill and put every patient on bimagrumab.
It seems like a good idea.
Give the people what they want.
Yeah, or compounded bimagrumab.
It's safe and effective.
Yep. Lilly direct bimagrumab. Anyways, those are the 14 recommendations. That hopefully this gave you an idea of what you should probably do, which is talk to your doctor about it. This is not medical advice. But in all seriousness, we probably will put a simple micronutrient panel or vitamin panel on our website so that everyone can at least get tested. Keep in mind, if you do get tested and it is either extremely low or extremely high, you will probably want to do something about it.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. And whenever we make our Instagram post about this, we'll probably have a simple chart of our, you know, recommended ranges. I'm personally not convinced that going from a vitamin D level of 40 to 51 changes your immune function significantly. But it seems like it may have an impact on myostatin and muscle function. And for like myself and some patients that we discuss it with, that seems to be a reasonable approach. If someone wants to optimize muscular performance, muscle growth, then that would be a reasonable recommendation.
Yep. Although I don't want to get too bulky, so I'm not going to.
You're going to keep yours just shy of 50?
Just toned, yeah.
Just going for tone. What's the optimal vitamin D dose for tone?
40 to 50 for tone.
Yeah, and I guess we can touch on what were some of those questions? You mentioned like vitamin K2, which type? Mm-hmm. What were some of the other things people wanted to know about?
Is vitamin D toxic? Can it go up to 200, 300? I know Dr. Henry, one of our friend physicians, he's an orthopedic doctor from Indonesia, is a member of the Vitamin D Society. Even in Indonesia, people are often vitamin D deficient. And he sees a lot of fractures that are due to osteopenia, osteoporosis, and just general debility, sarcopenia. So he is certainly a fan of supplementing. But is it dangerous to have a vitamin D of 100, 120? And part of that just lies in where the calcium is going throughout the body. Vitamin D tells you to keep calcium. And vitamin K2 tells you where to put it. And of course, that's an oversimplification. But supplementing vitamin D, especially if it's a higher dose with some vitamin K2, the MK4 is the kind of prodrug or the long-acting version, kind of like T3 for thyroid. And the MK7 is the active form or faster acting. And they both have lots of evidence, but MK7 tends to have more evidence. Usually at a dose between 100 and 300 micrograms. MK4 doses are much higher, often 1,000 micrograms.
Yeah, some which of the is one Japanese studies are in the tens of thousands of micrograms.
Yep. I think the max dose is something like 25 mgs of MK4 because it's harder to overwhelm.
And I don't know if studies have specifically looked at, like, in the context of vitamin D, induce rises in calcium, does MK7 reduce fracture risk or reduce the risk of vascular calcification? But it has been evaluated independently.
Yep.
And I would wager that taking a MK7 supplement, dosed high enough, generally around 200 micrograms, 200. That would probably do more for your bone density than taking your vitamin D from 40 to 60.
Agreed.
Probably more for your risk of cardiovascular disease too. I don't know if they've had one that's statistically significant, but there have been trends towards less plaque accumulation with MK7 supplementation. So it's not going to make sure that you never get heart disease. That would be misleading and a mischaracterization, but it might help a little bit.
Mm-hmm. If you have any significant kidney disease, or you suspect that you might, or if you have, say, osteoporosis or another condition where vitamin D status and calcium status is very important, then you probably want to check both a 25-hydroxy and a 125-hydroxy. But 125-hydroxy D is certainly not the optimal test to choose unless you're a alternative medicine clinician who just knows that he or she has a higher margin on that test and you're just trying to make more money. That's the reason to test it for everyone.
So if it's not my nephrologist or family doctor testing it, then it's probably someone making money off me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that answers all the questions. Hopefully they didn't get too dark there at the end, but frankly, that is the state of the medical community right now. We have had all of those questions within the last 1 to 2 weeks about vitamin D. It is that time of the year. It's about to be winter. It is also reasonable for some individuals to supplement with vitamin D just during late fall, winter, and early spring, believe it or not.
Yeah. Personally, I probably a 40% reduction in my vitamin D over the summer because my levels peaked a little bit over 100. So I've reduced it by about 40%. I'll probably pick back up here come October. You know, not a super scientific decision, but based on historically where my levels have been, that's what I'm going to do. People are always interested in what our regimens are.
Yeah.
What's your personal vitamin D? Are you're taking a combo D3K2, correct?
Yeah, I take a combo D3K2. I do like to align my vitamin D with my bulk because of the myostatin inhibition.
Sure.
Actually not. but I'm not against taking 10,000, 15,000 every few days as long as I'm optimizing my status. But I do try to take about 5,000 of vitamin D3. About 9 months of the year, that keeps my levels between about 50 and 100.
Sounds like you're pretty optimized.
Yep. I think that about covers it. Let us know questions in the comments below. Let us know if we spoke at the right level or whatnot and avoided medical jargon. And let us know if you're enjoying the dry humor and sarcasm. As always, thank you for your time. And may God bless you with health and happiness.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.